That's how my voice sounds with this little scratchy voice that I have right now. A bit of a cold, and everybody runs away from you nowadays. Have you noticed that? Anyway, Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM, broadcasting live from more than 500 affiliates in North America, including Puerto Rico, Guam, and Canada. It's Coast to Coast AM, and I'm out of the iHeart Studios at 850 AM, 94.1 FM, KOA, the voice of Colorado. A reminder that when you're looking for cool things, you don't have to hit all those social media areas. You can just go to coasttocoastam.com. Our website has new stuff all the time and some really, I mean, the best of the best stuff. Remember, like you guys, we're the core, we're the source of all this stuff, right? Check it out, the pictures that are up there right now, just in the carousel going by. One of them is a puzzling debris crashes in Navajo Nation. To me, tell me what you think that is. I think that's a satellite, and I think it even deployed the parachute thing. I'm not, you know, look, what do I know? But that's what it looks like to me. You know, tell me what you think. Tell us all what you think about that. Then we've got Tasmanian tiger test with a DNA company that's developing that. Holy cow. Look at the pictures up. Beautiful. And Coast, you missed it. One of our features. I love that too. And there's a beautiful picture of a rare albino buck spotted in Wisconsin. It's gorgeous. Oh my gosh. Anyway, we have a lot of stuff in there. You can check out the shows, what's coming up next, who's on, all that kind of stuff. All great things. It's our website. Go check it out. CoastToCoastAM.com. Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, retired Major George Filer, and he has seen aliens, and they have seen him. Yeah, I want to hear more of those stories. Okay, George, so you were in the middle of the story. You were talking about that the little aliens were running around on the base, and then they got they got the one that was shot.
Well, we got it.
Okay.
Anyway, we got the one that was shot, and the ambulance crew put him on the C-141 casket, you know, and flew to Wright-Patterson with the body. Now, that's where they keep a lot of the UFOs that crash and, you know, the bodies, that kind of thing.
So how were these captured before? Were they from, like, Roswell times, or were they, you know, relatives, or what? Tell me about them.
Well, through the years, Roswell and, you know, mostly out west, different ones have crashed. The different UFOs have crashed, and they bring the debris or the whole craft, depending on how much is left. In some cases, the UFOs are so big they can't carry them. They have to put them in a hangar, you know, out west somewhere.
Oh, wow. I want to see one of those, the motherships, right?
I don't know if there's any actual motherships, but there's very large ones, you know, that fill in a hangar, that kind of thing. At least that's what some air policemen have told me, that they had you know, guarded them. And hardly a day goes by where I don't get calls from different people who are filling in the information. And that now we have what you would call UFOs, some of that technology, as well as the aliens. So it's hard to say when you see a ship whether it's ours or theirs, but... although I've yet to find a pilot who claims that they fly one, although some of our ships are very large, you know, and carry radars and so on, that could be easily mistaken for a UFO. Mm. Going back to McGuire, what happened as the morning wore on, I prepared a briefing for General Tom Sadler. And just before I went on, Colonel came up and said, don't brief us, to the whole group there. Apparently they want to keep it quiet. So after my regular briefing, which is out loud, which is secret and below. We have top secret and above is in a notebook, and we give that notebook, bring it down to the general, and he reads the notebook, and we're not supposed to talk about it in case somebody's listening. But in that case, as I went into the general's office, Colonel Margowitz, who was the head of the air police, came out and said, I just briefed General Sadler about the alien, you don't have to. So the interesting part of it was that I, almost every day I'd go to the photo lab because I needed to fill four screens when you're briefing. There's four different screens with all kinds of information, you know, like the what the aircraft are seeing and where they're flying and so on. But I went there frequently. Well, in any case, they had pictures of the alien, but they wouldn't show it to me. They said they couldn't.
Come on. So you didn't get to see it?
No, I actually had it in my hand, and as I started to open it, the captain said, you can't see it. And I said, well, I'm the general's briefer. They said, sorry, we were told not to show anyone.
Yeah, because they said, because one day you're going to be on Coast to Coast talking about it, and we don't want you to do that.
A lot of things went on at the base after that. There was a big snowstorm and a huge pile of snow with an air policeman at the top of the snow pile guarding it, which I thought was kind of funny, which I had a picture of him in this huge snow pile, which they could have had a UFO under it. And then the next few weeks, they closed different roads into the base, and there's a lot of bulldozers and big, heavy equipment operating on these roads like there might have been a crash of a craft, which is speculation, but I can never prove it one way or the other.
Oh.
But it ended up that, other than the people that were on duty that night, very few people knew of the fact that the alien had died there. And what they did is the air police who were out guarding him, they put him on a plane, flew him to Wright-Patterson, where they were debriefed and threatened, frankly, not to say anything, flew him back to McGuire and shipped overseas to, like, Okinawa and Greenland and so on. That and even the wing commander was transferred right away, as was I. That doesn't keep it quiet by transferring people.
I gotcha. This one was held in captivity, so we were able to hold them back, even though they can walk through walls, or they can. I mean, how did we do that? How we hold them, and why were we holding them, or do you know any of that?
All I heard is they had very sophisticated holding areas for the live ones. And some places, like in Area 51, I've talked to people who claim that they have their own section where they kind of live and take care of themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm wondering, I mean, would we keep them captured, or would we, you know, be, hey, hang out with us, let's work together here, or is it more of a capture?
Supposedly this group is free, and supposedly they come into Las Vegas and other places.
I think I've seen them on Match.com.
they can speak to you through their mind.
Yeah, telepathy.
And you'll get this signal from them, you know, how are you today or whatever. Well, this one day I was coming down the escalator in Macy's, and there was a very attractive blonde woman who reminded me of the alien that I had seen. And I thought to myself, you know, I bet she's an alien. And I'm coming down the escalator, And she looks up at me, turns around, and runs out of Macy's. And I ran after her, and she was gone.
Oh, that could be anything, you know? She could say there's this weird man.
It was too ugly or something. Yeah.
It wasn't an alien at all. It was just this man watching me.
But in any case, some of my other friends who know about aliens have had the same thing happen to them. Or, you know, comparable things. If you see beautiful people, almost too good looking, that may sound funny, but I think they work with their DNA in some way to make them very, very handsome or very beautiful. And if they look almost too good, you know, think to yourself, I wonder if that's an alien, and see what they do.
Okay, yeah, and think it.
Hey, you don't have to say, oh, wow, they, if they're a real alien, they'll pick it up.
Wow, that's interesting. But you did say that you did see one that you knew was an alien, and she had long blonde hair. Where did you see her?
Well, I was a young boy at the time, only like 5 years old. So I was still in kindergarten. And it started out, I saw a man in an all-black uniform, kind of like a flight suit. And my friend, John Fitzgerald, and I are riding our bicycles, and we're right by our house. And he points across the road to we lived on a, right next to a playground. It's a big playground. It's, you know, they had kids playing baseball and football and everything else, but under a tree is sitting a UFO. And he points to it. So we go over to the UFO, and he takes us inside and shows us all around. And everything was stainless steel, like your modern refrigerators. Matter of fact, a lot of it looked like a very modern kitchen. And inside, it seemed bigger than the outside. But I didn't see any place to sit or any controls or anything. And after, you know, 15 minutes or so, we left. And the ship started coming back about once a week. It would come back, and instead of the man, this pretty blonde lady would be there, who I kind of fell in love with.
Fell in love with, exactly. Kind of. I'm still talking about her today.
She's like 20 years old and very attractive. Well, the interesting part of the story is when I'm in college, I go to a carnival, and I thought I saw her.
Oh.
And I went up to her, and it wasn't her. It was just a normal human being.
Did you ask her, are you an alien? Yeah, you did not. No!
Well, I buried her.
Oh, I love it.
I buried the girl that looked just like the alien.
That's sweet. Oh, I love it. You saved yourself on that one. That's funny. Well, you know, when you were saying how, you know, the telepathy and the mind, do you think when you were young that it could have been like this just horrible looking, gray, tiny thing, you know, nasty, but yet it made you see that it was a beautiful woman?
Well, is it almost possible, you know?
Yeah.
At the time, I don't know if you know who Veronica Lake is, but she's an actress with long blonde hair. Well, she was kind of like the late, in other words, what I liked in a lady, and the alien looked very much like her. Now, I don't know if she knew that. But Veronica Lake is on the web. By the way, if you want more stories like this, you can go to my website, nationalufocenter.com, nationalufocenter.com.
Okay. Yep. There's so many stories on there. You know what? I've got a couple of questions from some friends that I wanted to definitely get to you real quick. So I want to ask a couple real quick, And then I want to get back to some of mine here. One of them was, did our government have triangular craft that were huge and capabilities to hover very slowly without any engine noise in the 80s? Because his family, his name's Cryptid 559, witnessed two triangular crafts that were next to each other going right over them, heading east over the mountains toward Area 51. That was in the 80s, and they were triangular. And that's his question. Were they, did our government have them, or did he maybe see something from beyond?
Well, I don't know for certain, but my guess is they did. And that's based on the fact that through my contacts and everything, I've known a lot of people in the aviation field. And they claim that very early we had various craft that we built. That the, now the interestingly enough, the blonde secretaries.
I knew it was coming.
Very attractive, helped us build these. But this is what people who had named the important aviation companies, and this is what some of them are telling me. William Tompkins is one that has put out some books telling about his working on these, on the craft and so on. And matter of fact, he designed one, and they wanted, they had the ability to, you know, lift them off because of gravity. So they designed the craft very similar to some of our modern submarines, because modern submarine goes under the sea and stays there, you know, for months. Well, they could build it and go up into space and stay there for months with a similar design, as long as they had the ability, you know, to overcome gravity.
That makes sense.
Now, he's told us, along with other people who work for, you know, McDonnell Douglas and Boeing and so on, that we have much more capabilities than the public knows.
I believe that.
I haven't been in their plants to verify that. So to answer our question, I say it's a very good chance what they saw was something we had.
Okay.
On the other hand, the aliens have similar craft, and they often fly, you know, two or three at a time. So she can decide what she thinks. Her guess is probably as good as ours.
Well, okay. I know, right? It's like, well, 50-50. It could be or could not. So another quick question before we go to break and then and have one more segment left with you is Phil Snyder's story, good old Phil Snyder, and the story about the alien war that he witnessed in the underground facility, true or not? I believe that 1,000%. I loved Phil Snyder stuff.
Well,
what
again,
about you?
I, you know, I wasn't there.
No.
It's certainly possible there. One of the things that Tompkins told me is that one group is not really friendly with us, and that most are friendly with us, but one group is not. He called them reptilians. I don't know if
that name matches very, very well. That just seems to work with it, to be the bad guys, that they're reptilians. So thank you for that. I think that's enough on that one. I agree totally with that, too. So, hey, everybody, thanks so much for being with us here. George Filer, Major George Filer, retired, is with us talking aliens, what he's seen, what he knows, what he's got some experience with. And we've got more to come, a last segment with him. I'd love for him to stay all night, but we've got open lines after that. So hopefully we'll hear from what you want to talk about. It's Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here on the weekend, on a Friday night, having a good time with our major, our retired major, George Filer. Very nice to meet him and having a good time with him. Talking about aliens, you talked about the one that got shot, George. And, okay, So I'm getting the impression we have a whole lot of aliens that we have with us underground or wherever we're keeping them. And we have good contact with them. To me, I've always thought, hey, the reason we don't have disclosure is because the aliens, they're the ones that can keep us shutting up. Because humans, you know, we can't always keep secrets. But it sounds like with this many, you know, one runs away, and just the fact that we have them and have this knowledge of, you know, they have procedures of what to do when one does escape, where to take them, what to do. That tells me that they really are keeping it under wraps themselves. It's not the aliens doing it. So why? What the heck? Come on. We already know. Is it just going to mess us up, or are we going to find out they're the ones that created us, that we're the world's best robots, and they're the ones that made us?
Are you asking a question?
I am. Bring it on. Tell me everything you know. You got 20 minutes. Give it all.
Well, I feel that there's a... I don't know if you're aware of this, but a lot of people that get abducted and so on claim that they're also healed and that the... aliens are helping them, and I've had quite a few abductees tell me that they're angels, and there seems to be a you might call it God part of this. Not all aliens are angels, but I think some of them are tied into this, and I'm not sure exactly how, but they're here to help us and do things. And I've talked to different people that, interestingly enough, you know, like they're swimming and they can't swim anymore and they just are going to drown. And suddenly somebody picks them up and brings them to the shore. And you could call them an alien or you could call them an angel or whatever. There's some kind of connection between all of this. I have a lot of stories where people are helped by them and do things like angels do. So whether they're really angels or not is a matter of, I guess, of finding out. But even some of them go as far as saying, you know, we're messengers of God or whatever. I just think that people should be aware of that part of the program. And if you're really in trouble and you're thinking of suicide or anything like that, you know, where things are kind of tough these days, don't be afraid to ask Jesus to call the angels to visit you and help you. That surprisingly enough, I found that... in many cases, it works, particularly if you're, you know, serious in what's going on. In other words, basically, I have a good feeling about the aliens, and I think that when they come here in large numbers, the world will be much better than it is now. And we won't have to fight communism and them, their bio wars and trying to get us all sick and so on. Just some of my thoughts that we can be helped. And I think I've been helped my whole life by the aliens.
How do you think you were helped?
Well, they've shown up frequently and kind of always try to let me know that they're there. I've seen them repeatedly through my whole life. And I know quite a few people that's also the case, whether, you know, they're military or whatever, that it's all tied together there in some way. And one interesting part of it is that people who claim to go aboard these spaceships often see like their relatives who have passed, which ties into kind of the ghost business.
Yeah. I am a lover of Dr. David Jacobs and his work.
He's a friend of mine.
Yeah, me too. I love him. I love his work. I love what he's written. And yeah, so I'm in line with his stuff. And of course, you're bringing up a lot of that. So have you talked to him lately? Is he doing
not
okay?
Lately. I used to go to his meetings regularly.
Mm-hmm.
He's over in Philadelphia. Well, you know, with all this sickness going on, we're not going like we used to.
This is true. Yeah, last time I talked to him, his wife had recently passed away, and, you know, they were best friends. And I had seen his house before. I don't know if you've been to his home, but it's like huge, right? It's huge.
Yeah.
You've been to it.
Times.
Cats everywhere. Okay. So he's like, I'm in this house all by myself. And just one of the neatest people in the world. So when you actually talk alien, you're talking from your own experiences as starting out even as a boy, like you're talking about, and also through the military way. So you've got a couple different ways to look at it. And I'm glad we both love David. He's just an incredible guy. But, and his research and Bud's, obviously. But do you think that because of that, is that maybe what even led you into the military? Do you think that they had any type of influence for you to do that? Or maybe you just loved flying at that point. Maybe it had nothing to do with it, but do you think it had anything to do with it?
Well, it's certainly possible. I went to Bradley University, and there's like 1,000 freshmen and sophomores. Any case, there's only 20 of us that went into the advanced program where you become a, you know, in the Air Force and fly and so on. In other words, I was 20 out of 1,000, in roughly speaking, to get in. In other words, I think they helped me in some way, you know.
Mm.
And
yeah.
I get a lot of strange phone calls, and almost every day people call me, you know, having seen UFOs or being abducted or whatever the case may be, and I don't think in 20 years, I don't think of any, other than my good friend who never believed in UFOs, I finally got him interested when I gave him my book that a lot of people say that John Gurr's book that he wrote about me is the best UFO book I've ever written. Because it kind of gives the, you know, what my life is like. Not that I'm not great, but the fact that I've seen all these UFOs and met a lot of famous people and brief generals and this kind of thing throughout my whole career, and just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Or the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, yeah,
depending on how you look at it.
since I think they're basically good and try to help us, I look at it as a good thing, not as a bad thing. Now, some people do have bad experiences, you know, and that may be how you look at it.
Absolutely. That would definitely do that. Let's bring John back up again, since we'll be closing out here. I know that he says just incredible things about you. And John, is there any other things that you want to brag about with him that is tip-top stuff, since he's going to be leaving us here?
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. I've enjoyed the interview, George. I really have. And, Tommy, you're asking some great questions, questions I haven't had a chance to ask him as well. But in Strange Craft, The True Story of an Air Force Intelligence Officer's Life with UFOs, George got a lot of details from that shooting of the alien there at Fort Texas. the body lay there in the middle of the night, and the gentleman who found the body, the Jeff Morris, the security guard, waited for more security folks to come so they could deal with the body. And he said there was an ammonia-like smell in the air from the body. I thought it was very, this is part of George's report, as well as they brought a garden sprayer along, and these were blue berets, Air Force uniforms, from a C-141 from Wright Patterson, and they used a garden sprayer to coat the alien body with a clear liquid. Then they wrapped it in plastic sheeting and then built a wooden crate around it, put the wooden crate into an aluminum box, and then flew off of it. Just some amazing details to his reporting there. And CBS News picked it up at the time, as well as some local newspapers.
Wow. Was there blood, and was the blood red?
I don't know those details. But, you know, depending on who you ask now, he asked a couple of different, witnesses. The body was either in repose sitting up dead or was splayed out on the deck. I found that interesting, too. But it was 5 gunshots from, that would have been from the MP, the military police, the Army side of the fence. There's 2 bases next to each other. The details are in the book. But just amazing reporting that he did.
I'm curious. It's like, okay, it escaped, and then it just started running. Did it have a destination, or was it just like, I'm just getting the heck out of Dodge,
Well, it panicked, had been injured. The night began after midnight in January 1978. It was a winter night, and the discs started to fly patterns over these 2 bases that are next to each other, Fort Dix and the McGuire Air Force Base. And they shared a fence line. And so these MPs in trucks, and the security trucks, were chasing these UFOs around, and they would zip off to another part of the base, and they'd drive after them. Well, this one guy, the UFO was over his truck on the MP, and he got out, and in his headlight, the UFO was above his truck, and in his headlights was a small being, a creature, And so pulled his weapon, he fired at the object above him, and then fired a couple of shots at the being or the entity. It then ran under, crawled under the fence, or jumped over the fence onto the McGuire Air Force Base property. And that's when the Air Force security guards had to search for the body, and they found it at the end of a National Guard runway that was defunct.
Wow. I'm surprised. I would think that they would try to do everything they possibly could to not shoot it to where it could kill it, but more of a stunning type thing. Is that been changed now, of, or?
Well, I would say that I think the word here would be spooked.
Right. Absolutely. Yes, I would be. I mean, what the?
Yeah.
True.
I'm not sure if they're training, I'm sure, is to arrest and to bring the subject to the security office for questioning. It's probably the best, result of an investigation of an intruder, but it didn't turn out that way this one.
Oh, that sounds right. Especially a lot of times, those guys don't know what they're protecting, right? They just know they're protecting something.
Right.
So I'd be spooked, too. That's perfect.
George has told me a couple of times, he told me that these intrusions, these overflights, occur where there's nuclear weapons are stored, either in, armories or, Rattlesham Air Force Base. Roswell, 509th Bomber Squadron, was there for World War II. The Noah Gay was a member of that flight wing. So, there's usually a nuclear weapon involved, and they say, that's George can probably expound more on why the connection between nuclear weapons and aliens.
And that's like a whole other show on a whole other night. So, John, hey, thank you for joining us and helping us out here. We appreciate that. And I know you've been on before, and I'm sure we'll have you on again with more of these stories from you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and good night, George, and good night, Con.
Good night. Thank you. So there you go, George. He said some beautiful, wonderful things about you. How do you feel about that? You good? You okay?
Right.
Hanging in.
By the way, answering your question, I don't think there was red blood.
No.
the alien, the fellow that found it thought it was more like robotic plant-like. I mean, kind of a combination of, you might call, human and robotics.
Interesting.
Although he didn't take it apart, he just, you know, saw it. I talked to Jeff Morris a couple of times and other people that saw the body.
So
and,
maybe...
You know, it goes to Wright-Patterson and they do autopsies and et cetera. But they don't seem to be like humans, if you follow me. They seem to be partially made in some way.
Yeah, no, I get you. Maybe more of a lubricant is what was oozing out of the body. Yikes. Well, anyway, we're going to say goodbye to you because it's time for you to hit the sack. Thank you so much for being with us. I got your number, so I'll put it on a few bathroom walls, but I'm going to be calling you myself, okay?
Okay. You only out here to Philadelphia?
I'm sorry?
You said you...
Yeah, I would go see him there.
Well, you can come and see me. I'm just not far from him.
I'm going to do that. When I knock, you better answer. That is Major George Filer III. I'm going to take him up on that, by the way, you guys. He was great. Oh, thank you guys so much. And open lines are coming up next. Connie Willis with you here. You are listening to Coast to Coast AM.